by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
Upon decaying every foul wicked spirit in the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, Deborah LeVay, on The Ooze, spread out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
They kind of missed the whole point.
To really tap into have a serial kind
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
All right, it's Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9 p.m. Central Time, and you are listening to The Ooze Luminous Edition. This is your host, Jason Sorrell, and for the next hour, we're going to be chatting about a number of different topics, and we're going to be going back to the list probably later on this evening, depending on how much time I spend on the topics that are at the forefront of my mind right now. As you folks know, this show is a little bit different from the other episodes of The Ooze. With this show, I kind of rattle on about different subjects for as long as it takes. And if it doesn't go the whole episode, well, then we move on to the next thing. If you want to call in, though, the phone number is 347-989-1371. My computer's going to be running a little bit slow tonight. I got the chat room open, and I'm looking for that, looking for people to come in and listen and make those calls. But I'm also downloading a video, probably the longest video I've ever shot for YouTube. It ended up being a total of about 25 minutes, almost 30 minutes. The reason for this video is a gentleman who goes by Ivor Cornuta on YouTube. He's a guy that's a pretty cool guy, pretty hip guy. He does a channel where he features public domain horror films. So these are films that were shot some years ago, and they're now public domain. There's no rights necessarily to them. They're available for anybody to, download, feature, whatever they want to do, and he has a channel full of them, along with some other little media minutiae oddities that are kind of cool to look at and everything. And the guy is a real videophile. I mean, he is really into this. This is what he does. It's the way he expresses himself through his philosophy. He's also a card-carrying member of the Church of Satan, from what I understand, basically. And this video interest of his is one of the ways he expresses himself as a Satanist. What he did was he shot a video, and he basically had a complaint. He had a point to make, and you'll have to see the video actually to get a handle on it. Basically, the video he shot though was saying that he listed a number of Satanists, people he considered Satanists, and talked about how these people are too busy debating the whereofs and why-fors of the philosophy itself, instead of just living as Satanists. And just said having some mutual respect for one another, Satanists were busy debating the, the nuances of the philosophy. And so I shot a video because he mentioned my name. He brought my name up as somebody he would like to see just shoot videos about art and tattooing, something I do, and stick to that. He found my videos on my original channel entertaining. He had that comment to make initially. So I guess he just decided that he's tired of the drama. And we all get there, I think. So I shot a video explaining, of course, where I thought he was going wrong with this. Now, I did what the guy's doing. So, I wasn't a total dick about, the video I shot or anything like that. But I had to let him know, set straight a few things. One, I don't identify as a Satanist anymore, and some people that he was naming or referring to also no longer identify as Satanists. They still affiliate with the Satanist community. They still have, the philosophical leanings and share the ideals of many Satanists, but they themselves have chosen, for whatever reasons, not to be Satanists. My particular reason for not identifying as Satanist anymore is because the label was becoming something other than what I understood it to be. What I understood it to be was self-defining, self-determined. You made your own way. You found you were responsible to yourself, and you lived by this opposition philosophy where what you were told wasn't necessarily what you accepted as truth. You had to find out these things for yourself, and the whole issue of debating and trying to figure out what Satanism is, trying to decide or come up with a hard-line version of Satanism that everybody would then have to, you know, be subordinate to in their thinking. This is the trend, you know, both for and against. And it's funny because you'll see some of the staunchest people who are opposed to any kind of definition to Satanism turn around and tell other people what they think Satanism is and how they're not living up to those standards. You know, it's always interesting to see that kind of thing going on. My thinking was that the most satanic thing I could do in line with this philosophy, and I come from the philosophical school of Anton LaVey. So when I'm talking about Satanism, I'm talking about Satanism from LaVey's perspective, or at least as I understand that perspective based on his writing. So when we're talking about Satanism, the most satanic thing I could think of, you know, not identifying with other things, not identifying with other institutions, his, you know, organization to join for a joining organization for non-joiners, a label for people who don't choose not to have labels. Well, the most satanic thing I could think of to do would be to give up the label itself, to just stand on my own two feet without that identifier, without being able to point to that and going, yes, I happen to be a Satanist, and then let people, you know, make their own conclusions, draw their own conclusions from that statement. So I opted to, you know, I made this announcement back in May that I was no longer going to identify as a Satanist, no longer going to pursue that as a philosophy, and basically, and I said that I didn't have a horse in the running as far as what other people decided Satanism is or is not. So Ivor made comment that he thought that we would be better served as Satanists if we didn't discuss so much the philosophy of Satanism, and said we should, you know, demonstrate Satanism. We should show how through our hobbies, through whatever, what Satanism is, how we live it, that kind of thing. I agree with him, I think, on that point. You know, I had to point out, A, that you know, some of the people he was referring to, they aren't necessarily Satanists. That was point one. And my second point, of course, was that I do express myself, my philosophy, through a number of different means. Ivor's main thing, apparently, is his YouTube channel. And if you check out his YouTube channel, I mean, it is a YouTube channel. He is, you know, posting stuff. It's not like the rest of us. And, you know, the rest of us, we seem to have, I say the rest of us, the people that I deal with, I have a lot of cool friends and everything else who do the YouTube thing, and it's awesome. Okay, I love watching, you know, Jason King post a video, Dark Fool post a video. TC, when he gets around posting videos, I dig his videos. I mean, even Venger Satanist, even Derek Bischoff, when he posts a video, I watch it. You know, I got to pay attention, got to see what's going on, okay? And sometimes he makes good points, you know, whatever. So there's always something good coming out of what, you know, people posting, expressing themselves. But most people, what they're doing is just expressing their ideas. Ivor's actually trying to put on a show. Ivor's actually trying to, you know, engage the media, actually use the format to its fullest potential. So he's got kind of a different view on things. But then the YouTube channel, I haven't done any research. I can't say definitively that this is the only thing Ivor's done. And I call him out for not doing any research. So I don't want to make any blanket statements or assumptions. But he seems very invested, let's just put it that way, in his YouTube channel. And due to his investment, his YouTube-focused, you know, process, when people aren't, I'm assuming, using YouTube to the extent that he's using it, well, then he thinks we're just falling short. And that's called solipsism in the Church of Satan. It's one of the nine satanic sins. And I had to point that out to him. That was my third point. So the second point was how YouTube isn't being used in the same way by the people he's calling out. And the first point, of course, was that, some of the people he's calling out are not Satanists. So I've been spending the day, a good portion of my day, shooting this video. And because of the busy routine of my day, I had to shoot it in segments. And then I had to paste it all together. But that afforded me the opportunity to enter some things into the video that normally would not be part of the video process. Some images, some, you know, a side video that was done on a media player instead of using my normal video formatting tool, that kind of thing. So it allowed me to do some, you know, some different things with the video format. But then the video, of course, ran 25 minutes. So what happened there was I use an online tool, OneTrueMedia, and I pay for the service, so you know I don't have the cheesy little OneTrueMedia commercial at the beginning and the end of my video. But I use OneTrueMedia, so you got to upload your video there. You've got to, you know, of course, edit and do all of that with it. And then you have to download the damn thing back onto your computer. The download was 105 minutes, and that's, you know, preparing to download, and then the download itself. And now I'm in the process. The thing is finally going, and it's being uploaded right now to YouTube. So I may put a link somewhere in the chat room, what have you. But if I'm a little slow in responding to some of the things that are going in the chat room right now, well, of course, this shifting around of data on my computer has basically slowed everything down. It's made it difficult to do anything while this is going on. But should be interesting, should be entertaining. And what it afforded me, Ivor's video and his criticism, what it afforded me was opportunity to, on this particular YouTube channel where I discuss mainly philosophy, it afforded me the opportunity to actually talk about some of the other things I'm doing. So it's a big commercial for my blogs, for The Ooze, for eminentmind.info, for Creative Audio Studios. It's all in there. And I had a good time with it, so I'm hoping that Ivor digs it and that the people who check it out, you know, that they enjoy it or what have you. It should be informative. I got a little, you know, a couple of funny jokes in there. I, after watching the video, you know, didn't realize I'd put in these jokes and made it funny, basically. So it was a good video. It was a good experience. It just takes forever to upload and download, and it's slowing everything down. So the thing I wanted to touch on after, you know, talking about the video process, the video shooting process today, I wanted to talk about the big news story, the story of the news cycle today is Obama's jobs bill. And the point of the Obama's jobs bill is, the big thing is that he would like to see the unemployed become a protected class in regards to hiring. Now, what that means is that right now, ethnicity is a protected class. In other words, you cannot discriminate against somebody for a position based on their ethnicity. Gender is a protected class. You cannot discriminate against somebody based on their gender. Veterans, so you're coming back from a war, whatever, you can't be discriminated because you were, you know, coming back, you know, from a war. That was a Vietnam era thing, that you can't be discriminated against for a job, or you can't be, you know, not given a job because you're a veteran. So race, gender, sexual orientation, I believe, is a protected class. If that somehow comes out in an interview, that, you know, that can't go against you in hiring. There's a number of different protected classes, and from a social standpoint, it makes sense. It all comes from times in our social evolution where the mindset was that these people didn't deserve a fair shake, or that these people were somehow less than the people who were hired doing the hiring. So it made sense. It was a necessary process. Now, as I look at our society today, the only thing that these protected classes serve anymore is to make sure that we don't slip back into that mentality. Okay? I don't think there aren't too many people out there, and I say this, you know, as a white male, so I know that my perspective is probably a little bit skewed, but it seems in my naivete, if you will, that it would be hard-pressed to find a hiring an HR person who actually discriminated or blatantly discriminated against women, against people of different ethnicities, against homosexuals. I'm sure it's out there, and I'm sure it happens. But it's not late because, again, these are protected classes. Now, unemployment, being unemployed is now something that our president would like to see become a protected class. So the one comment I have to make before I kind of really roll into this is, comrade, are you ready for your job assignment? Okay? So that's where this is going, in my opinion. And this is, I mean, this is something that this is my opinion that I've held even before this protected class thing, that that we are moving our society, at least there's a segment of our society that is pushing and pushing and pushing for the eventual work assignment situation. If you look at the way that our education system is set up, if you look at the way the economy is going, if you look at the direction that the solutions for our economy and everything else, it seems that the solution, the ultimate end to all these things, is that you will go to high school for, you know, you go to school for a certain period of time based on your aptitudes you and your interests. You will eventually be allowed to graduate and enter the workforce, and you will be assigned a job, okay? And the job will be a mix of your what your aptitudes are, what you're able to do, what your interests are, but also, of course, what fulfills the needs of the state. So the situation, how do we go from the unemployed becoming a protected class to this? Well, the way that happens in my mind is that you reach a point where if you're unemployed and you go looking for a job, let's say you milk the unemployment. I think you've got like 90 weeks now. I'm not sure. I know it's a ridiculous amount of time. I know it's almost 2 years in some situations that you could be on unemployment. So let's say you milk it for the entire thing. And I wouldn't fault you for that, okay? If you get on unemployment, I would be the last person to fault you for doing nothing but drawing a paycheck and trying to perpetuate that. In my opinion, you know, if you worked, you paid into that system, you paid into that process. So if the economy's taking a shit, you can blame the politicians for the economy taking a shit. There's all kinds of bullshit reasons for the economy going to the tank and you not having a job. So now that you are unemployed, well, you know what? If it's 99 weeks, milk it for 99 weeks. If that's what you want to do. And while you're doing it, you'll get yourself an education. Get out there and get some skills. It doesn't have to be a regular college education either. You know, if just better yourself in some way so that at the end of the 99 weeks, when you're out there tooling around for a job, you've got something else to turn to. That would be my advice. That would be my only bit of advice. Now, with this, if this thing were to go through, here's what's interesting. Obama's calling it a jobs bill. Well, it's not officially a bill until it has some legs in the Congress, until somebody actually sponsors the damn thing. And that hasn't happened yet. As a matter of fact, Harry Reid, the majority leader in the Senate, I believe, he has said he's going to take it on, but he hasn't actually done it yet. He says that there are several priorities ahead of it. One politician, I think, described it as political suicide to take on this task, because what you'll be doing is, of course, you'll set every business against you. And why would that happen? Why would businesses be opposed to the unemployed being a protected class? Well, it means that if you come in and you're unemployed and you meet the qualifications, you have all the basic skills, whatever it is, you meet whatever their requirements are at a job. You walk in, and on your resume, you've got this space of almost 2 years where you have not worked. You have been unemployed. And when your interviewer person says, you know, so what was going on during these 2 years? Well, I could not find work. I tried. Every week I went out to find work. I qualified for my unemployment check, which required that I go out and attempt to get a job at X number of different places every week. It just did not happen. And now here I am trying to get a job once again, okay? That HR person at this point has to make a decision, okay? You're qualified, but you haven't been in the workforce for a year plus. Whether it's hard to imagine somebody out there wanting a job, wanting to find, you know, wanting to work, not having something, all right? So that HR person has to decide, okay, do I go ahead and disqualify this person for some other reason? It could be anything, if you think about it, especially in Texas where, you know, you're a work-at-will state or whatever, your attitude wasn't right. Your personality didn't fit, whatever, okay? You make that decision, well, then you risk basically this person going and getting a lawyer. This is what they were saying today, the politicians and the newsies today. This is what they were saying today, that what you do is you go get out, they called this a boon for trial lawyers. And you go out, you take this to a lawyer, and that lawyer is going to go ahead and run with that and say you were discriminated against because you're unemployed. You have all the skills. You have all the requirements, the prerequisites. The only thing you don't have is the fact that you're unemployed. And there's a comment being made in the chat room right now that skills atrophy over time, so why would you be required to hire them? And I would agree with that. But then here's the other thing. It's like if you really didn't want to hire somebody based on their race, well, then you find some other excuse. And all that would happen, I think I had this discussion with somebody recently, what would eventually happen is if enough people go in, let's say enough black people go into a certain office, they're trying to get a job there, if they walk in and they notice that every face they see is white, and they go to get their job, they have friends who have tried to apply for the job, or after not getting the job, after discussing it with family members and friends, you find out that you have a number of friends and family members who also applied to the same office and did not get a job. So when this raises an eyebrow, well, you contact whoever you contact, and they look into it, and they're looking for percentages, okay? If the population of blacks in your particular area is 25%, well, then the demographic in your employment should look to be roughly 25%. So if the unemployment in your area is 50%, well, then the demographic of people that you hire who are unemployed, who were previously unemployed, should be roughly 50%. You know, there's a little bit more nuance to the equation because you got to factor in, you know, people that were there before the issue with the economy and things like that. But you get what I'm saying. They have a way to check it. So when you with this hiring situation, especially right at the beginning, because, you know, how many people that are working at a job right now were unemployed when all this, you know, the economy went down? So if you're in HR and you're looking at this and you got somebody who's unemployed and this job still goes through where the unemployed and protected class, well, if you're unemployed, you just guaranteed yourself pretty much you're going to have a job or you're going to have a lawsuit, one or the other, and it's going to break your way. Now, so what will eventually happen, or what I imagine happening, if we would take this out to its ultimate logical conclusion, is that you would eventually have a situation where you've got businesses who simply aren't hiring. And this is the talk, okay? This is what the folks are saying who are, you know, business owners who are talking to different people about this today. Now, what they'll do is they simply won't hire. They won't expand their businesses. They won't create any more jobs. They won't do anything like that because the rigmarole about hiring has become, it's gotten out of their control. And think about this in your head. If you have a business, if you want to go out and start a business, let's say you start a comic book company, something ridiculous like that, something that I have actually a little bit of knowledge of. You start a comic book company, and it's because you love comic books, you love storytelling, you love drawing, you love producing, you love the feel and the look of the comic book. You love it. You love having that thing go out there every month. So you and a couple of your buddies, you start a comic book company, and you're producing one book, and it's successful, let's say. It's successful enough that you begin to expand your comic book company. You have additional books that you're running. You have additional lines. You start out with different products and everything else. This thing starts to kind of snowball. It gets bigger, and you start having to hire people who are outside even the creative process. You need people to manage payroll. You need people to manage your production. You need people to manage, you know, whatever. So you start needing bodies. You need people to be in there. Okay, you need a workforce. You need them, you know, within this particular job because you've got a successful comic book company. And it's your comic book company. And when you started running it, you tried to be laid back, okay? You're born a child of the 70s or whatever, so you've got a little bit of hippie in you and everything. And you wanted to be laid back. You want to be cool. It's a comic book company, for Christ's sake, right? I mean, you want everything to be, you know, easygoing and carefree. And as long as the comic book gets out and the production, you know, the orders get met and everything else like that, you want to be able to let kind of things go whatever way they want to go. So then you got the government coming in and going, no, you can't run your business that way. You can't run your old business the way you want to run it. You have to hire a certain percentage of women. You have to hire a certain percentage of minorities. You have to hire a certain percentage of disabled. You have to hire a certain percentage of veterans. You have to hire a certain percentage of those who were previously unemployed. You have to use certain grades of ink. You have to use certain grades of paper. Your production process must, you know, have engaged some sort of recycling or energy-saving process. The office hours have to be this. They can't be that. They can't be outside these office hours, less than or more than these hours. You have to have X number of breaks. You have to make sure that health care is there. You have to make sure that there's plenty of maternity leave. You have to make sure. So there's all these regulations. And it's, there. Like I said, there was a time when these are definitely positive things, okay? So I don't want to see all these things go away. But the point I'm making here is that as the government becomes more and more involved in regulating a person's business, a person's, you know, dream, basically, the urge to start a business, the urge to own a business is going to go away. Eventually, in my mind, if that continues to be the trend, you're going to have more people choosing to, I'd rather work for somebody else than have a business, or I'd rather go on unemployment. I would rather not do that. I'd rather close my business. So whatever product, whatever service I provide goes away. Well, if there's a demand for that product or service, or if there's a public need for that product or service, and it goes away, if nobody's providing it, well then, who do the constituents, who do the members of a certain community, who do they turn to provide that service? Well, they turn to the government. I mean, I know the government doesn't necessarily own the auto company, but they're partnering it right now, okay? The government doesn't necessarily own the banks, but they're also big partners in that right now, too, because of the investments. How soon will it be before it becomes necessary for the government to just step in and go, well, since we don't have anybody else providing the service in your area and everything else, we're going to go ahead. I mean, it's practically that way with government subsidies for a lot of small businesses anyways. We're going to go ahead and we're going to set up a government-ran business. It's going to meet all these regulations. It's going to hire X number of people. It's going to be the utopian society. It's going to be the exact percentage of reflection of the community that it exists in. And it's going to be run this way. Whether it makes a profit or not, it doesn't matter. And that was, I forget what business it was that was engaged in. It was like it didn't matter if they made a profit or not. It just hit, as long as they provided this service. You see that with most public services, welfare programs, things like that. It doesn't matter if it's profitable or not. The Social Security program doesn't matter if it's profitable or not. It doesn't matter if it's meeting its budget or not. It has to provide the ongoing service. So making the unemployed a protected class is a mistake. And the mistake in my mind is not so much, it's this half-assed thing that I see in so many things with government. And by the way, call number is 347-989-1371. So if you want to call in and share your views on the unemployment becoming a, or the unemployed becoming a protected class, call in and we'll hear what you have to say. But in my mind, the issue is not should it be protected class, should not be protected class. It's this half-ass, we want you to have your own business, but we're going to regulate it. We're not taking over. We're not telling you how to run your business, but we are telling you how to run your business. It's almost, it's like either get out of the way or take it over completely. That's what I want to see, one way or the other. Either start assigning jobs so that everybody has employment and everybody in this society feels useful and everybody thinks they have something to do for the betterment of all mankind in our nation, or get the hell out of the way, sink or swim becomes the mantra of the day, and let everybody take their own risk. Let everybody do on their own, one way or the other. So I'm not voting, I'm not voting up or down. Ideally, in my mind, I would prefer, I should cast my ballot, shouldn't I? I would prefer to take the risk. I would prefer to, to have to sink or swim, basically. I would rather that than have the government telling you what to do. But at least if the government's telling you what to do, well, then all the regulation that makes sense. You don't have to worry about, your business, your employer's business being regulated right on out and then you on unemployment. It's a given. As soon as you leave high school, you went to public school, and now you're getting a public job, and eventually you'll have a public retirement. You'll be living in your public housing unit, on public utilities, and this is your life, comrade. This is the lot that you were born into because you were lucky enough to be born into this social nation, this socialist government, and that wonderful utopia, whatever that might be, whatever that might look like. Everybody wearing the same, gray jumpsuits and the whole thing, drinking that Kool-Aid or whatever might be coming down. Okay. So at least that would be better than this half-ass kind of approach that our government takes with everything, whether it's running the economy. Okay, well we don't want to run the economy. We want people. We want free enterprise. We want people to work capitalist society, but we want to make sure that everybody pays their fair share into what we got going on. Everybody pays into, what is that? What is your fair share? Because you got people talking about a fair share right now. You got people like Herman Cain talking about the 999 plan. Okay, the 999 plan is you get income tax is 9%, corporate tax is 9%, and sales tax is 9%. So it's 9% all the way around, flat, all the way around. So everybody pays the same thing. There it is. Everybody pays their fair share. Even those people who don't earn income, when they go out and spend their welfare checks, it's taxed at 9%. So there's no differentiating. It's all fair across the board. Well, they don't want that. So when they're talking about fair share, what the hell is it that they mean? And we talk about these business owners who didn't start their businesses in the vacuum. Well, no shit, they didn't start their business in the vacuum. But this woman, and I forget what her name is, this woman going on about how if you own a business, well, then, you know, taxpayers, our tax money paid for the roads that brought the materials to that business. Our tax money educated the employers, the workforce. Our tax money provides for the police services, the fire department, and everything else. So this business is beholden to the society around it because our tax dollars allow for that business to come into existence. Well, wait a second. Aren't the people who own the business invested in it as well? Aren't the people that are working for that business invested in it as well? And didn't their tax dollars also go into the streets and into the education and into the fire department, the police department, and everything else? Didn't they also have a hand in all that? People don't want you to think about that shit. So, yeah, it's just a erosion, basically, of the value system with which we grew up. There's an erosion of the social fabric, basically. It's this transformation. And what it's transforming into, it's hard to say. And what I find interesting about this transformation, what I think is important is that this transformation could be good or bad. The idea that there's momentum, that there's shift in our society, means that there's an opportunity for folks like you and I who are concerned, who have a certain direction that would be beneficial for ourselves, to actually start nudging this thing as it moves, to push this beast as it rolls around, to kind of get this going in the direction we prefer to go in. Now, what that direction will be, I mean, when you got 100 hands pushing in 100 different directions, it's hard to say, okay? But it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. Just be aware that there's a significant segment of the political machine right now that would like to hand you a number and a jumpsuit and a work assignment. And that seems to be what it is we're moving toward. So, again, the number is 347-989-1371. As we're speaking, this ridiculous video is uploading onto YouTube right now. I'm going to drop a link in the chat room here. And then it's mine. .info. All right, eminentmind.info. So dropping that in the chat room right now. Eminentmind.info, last week I talked about time. I talked about using time as a commodity, as something that we trade for the things we want, that you have X number of years. You don't know exactly how many years you have, but let's say on average it's 70 years. And let's say you do live a full life. You live the full 70 years or whatever. Well, during the 70 years, you're trading a certain amount of time to get the things you want. And you have to develop a certain value system because, you know, let's say if you're pursuing the American dream, well, then it's a wife, a house, you know, or a husband, a house, a partner, a house, a couple of cars, you know, plasma TVs, whatever other nonsense is not part of the American, whatever all that is. Or if you have a different set of values, you know, you have different things you're pursuing, things you want to get by the end of your life. For me, you know, of course, it's making sure that I leave a lasting impression on our species, basically. So whatever it is you got going, that's, you know, that was part of the discussion last week, was my trying to work out these thoughts as to how time would be traded as a commodity, or how this structure, this analogy works. And so what I did was I ended up, you know, I got input from folks, and I wanted to thank everybody for their input and everything. I asked for it, and it was great to actually get some input as I was putting this thing together. And the blog is now completed. If you go to eminentmind.info, it's the top blog right now. You can check that out. It's the first thing on the first page. The title is It's About Time. And I discuss the different structures of time, the different ways that it is used, And there's an interesting discussion about, you know, some further ideas in the comments. So definitely read those comments and check that out. Leave your own comments as well, because I want to read those. I want to continue to keep this discussion going. EminentMind.info. If you haven't checked that out, this blog out, T.C. Downey, who founded the Ooze, myself, Messiah Bay, who has a blog called The Necronomicon Tradition. We're all writing for this one blog now, and it's the idea is about, you know, awareness and our value systems and different philosophical aspects where we're actually talking at, not about just about the philosophy, but also about the application of the philosophies. So definitely check that out, and again, leave your comments and let me know what you think about the It's About Time blog or just any of the other blogs that are on there. So that did get completed, and I wanted to let people know that that was there, and I appreciated their feedback from last week's show, and hopefully they find the blog interesting. Okay, so the phone number is 347-989-1371 if you want to call in. Let's see, what was something else I was going to talk about? Let's see, the Ooze has just completed its two-year anniversary. Last week, if you missed it, all the co-hosts of the Ooze since its inception for 2 years were invited to come back onto the Ooze and just share their memories, share their thoughts on the Ooze and what, you know, what kind of things we had going on there. Wanted to know, you know, what their best memories were of the Ooze. And it included, you know, everybody from Zach Black of the Satanic International Network, who was on the air for about 15 minutes. He's a busy dude, and he only had time to do a short interview to Vendor Satanist, who has a lukewarm relationship with the folks who are now participating in the Ooze. But he was the first co-host, so it was a big deal to get him on the air, and it was an interesting show. It didn't explode, I think, in the way that people were thinking it was going to explode. So it was very cool. So if you haven't checked that out, it's all in the archive, and definitely give those a listen. I just want to say that it's been great. I've been around since the Twisted Radio days when TC and this guy named Gino were doing a kind of kooky, kind of crazy show, and that's kind of where Outbreak started, was a revival of the Twisted Radio package. And it kind of morphed as TC's and my own interest kind of developed, where we started, you know, things are still silly. They're still goofy to us and everything else, but we find other venues and other outlets to express all that, and we think a little bit more seriously. So then when we get together and start a discussion, well, then we are bouncing ideas off of one another. That's the other thing going on in the news right now, Sunday evenings. The take action, the outbreak edition has become this take action kind of thing. It's a 2-hour strategy session where we're talking about, you know, basically right now it's putting a buffer between yourself and this system, this thing that seems to be slowly falling apart. The analogy that I keep using, or I keep referring to, is that as a ship sinks, when it finally goes under, it takes a large body of water with it. And everything around it goes down with it. So if you don't have enough space between yourself and that system, if and when it does fall apart, well, then, you know, you're going to drown. Now, this is not the only reason for, you know, having some sort of buffer between yourself and the system. The system may not fail completely. It may fail, you know, there are parts of it that may fail, you know, at different times. As a matter of fact, I'm sure we've all experienced it, power outages, water main breaks. Things like that. There are things that you can do to prepare for those minor emergencies to make sure that you and your family are kept safe and are not inconvenienced. So this is what we've been talking about every Sunday on the Ooze for 2 hours. So definitely check those shows out as well. All right. So I wanted to go back to the list, and I mentioned last week's show that we'd probably do this. And looking at the list, the top thing on the list is Satanism and the Left-Hand Path. And that topic is going to have to probably take a whole show. So I guess what I wanted to pull off the list is political censorship. We got about 20 minutes left, so this should do just fine. Let's see. Oh, there's a comment here in the chat room that FEMA tweaked numbers to avert funding crisis. That's a nice way of saying FEMA is fucking lying or fucking lied. That's interesting. And I believe it, that when we're talking about a political party that is desperate to be reelected, desperate to hold power, and what political party is not? Okay, so the whole thing's skewed. So I'm not holding anyone more accountable than the other. But when you've got these different services, when you've got the media bias towards one particular party and everything else, so when you've got this budget crisis coming up, and remember a couple of months ago, there was this huge budget crisis that if we didn't get a budget that the whole government was going to shut down and our lives were going to end, that people were going to spontaneously combust, that all these different problems were going to occur, that planes were going to fall out of the sky and everything else because the government didn't have any money to run. In reality, it would have meant that some public parks would have been closed, the Library of Congress might have been closed and everything else, and your life probably wouldn't have been affected at all. Well, they made a big deal out of it. This time around, they didn't make such a big deal out of it, but they made sure that, especially as our president, is going around speaking to different people and trying to get himself reelected. You can say it's not a campaign, a reelection campaign, but it fucking is. So since he's going around speaking to people and everything else, well, he wanted to make sure there wasn't any kind of budget crisis going on that would take away from his campaigning. So FEMA made sure that the numbers, as far as their math is concerned and everything, we don't need the money right now. So, there's no reason to rush this budget thing. There's no reason to come up with any kind of emergency political activity or anything. Don't take away from the president and everything. Don't worry about it. We'll get by. We'll be fine. We'll be just fine. There's something wrong with a group of, let's say the analogy, again, you're an employer. And let's say that your employee, that you pay them by the job, okay? And let's say your employee insists that he gets paid before he does the work, okay? This is the way it is a lot of things. Let's say you pay him by the piece. Let's say you pay him a dollar a piece, all right? So when he comes to you and says, okay, I need, this week I need $10,000. And when you go, you need $10,000, it's kind of a ridiculous number. He's like, well, you know what? My driveway needs repaved. And my roof needs, reshingled. And the wiring in my house is faulty. It's not the latest. It's not the newest. So it needs to be brought up to speed. And my lawn's looking a little bit tired. So I need to do some, do some landscaping and everything else. My car is in need of repair. Matter of fact, I need to upgrade my car to something electric and everything else. And I've got dogs I need to take care of. I've got the family members I need to feed. I've got my teenage daughter's pregnant. I've got to feed them. And I got to take care of all of this. And there's all these different things going on. So $10,000 should be enough to cover everything. Okay. And you're talking about so you point out that the amount of labor you're going to be making one of these widgets. You make a widget and you're going to get a dollar per widget. And let's say you can put out 10 widgets an hour. And you're only working eight-hour days. There's no way in a week that you're going to get $10,000. But the guy says, no, you have to give this to me or else nothing will work. Everything will stop. I'll go away. I won't have anything to do with you, and you will lose your business. So you give up the $10,000. You feel compelled to give up the $10,000. He does produce some widgets. But he comes back to you the next week and goes, you know what, all those things that I needed, it costs more than $10,000 now, so we need more money. Well, how much? You spent $10,000 on it, so how much do you have left to do? Well, now it's going to be $30,000. So $30,000 minus the $10,000 that we gave to you last week. No, $30,000 on top of the $10,000 you gave me last week. Well, what happened to the $10,000 that I gave you? Well, there was a fundraiser at this thing, and the Girl Scouts came by for cookies. And, I wanted to make sure that there's these bands and everything else. So I wanted to make sure they got money and everything else, too. So the money kind of went in all these different directions other than the things I wanted to do. This is the way our government operates, okay? They go to the taxpayer. They are our employees. And they go to the taxpayer and say, hey, you know what? We've got all these things we want to do that you want us to do, even if you didn't necessarily vote on these things. We got all these things we want us to do and everything else, so we need, this advance from you as far as, funding is concerned. And you don't have a choice. you have to give us this advance. And then they take the money and they do whatever they want with it. You know, even if they said X number of dollars is going to go towards, you know, this project, if they feel that money would be, once they have the money, it's better spent on something else, a bluegrass festival in some state in the Midwest or whatever, well, then that's where the money goes. And that's just the way it works. It's a mess. So whenever you, and this is just a flawed plan. Anybody who runs a business will tell you this is a flawed way to run things, which is why I look to a politician like Herman Cain, who I endorsed way back when on my site, jasonsorrell.creativelifestudios.com, who I made a point of saying that Herman Cain was my guy. You look at somebody who's, this is a guy with business experience, this is a guy with good ideas about, you know, the political movement. I don't agree with everything he says. I'm not so much down with what he has to say about, you know, gay marriage and things like that. But I'm willing to tolerate his religious views to get some sensible government, to get some sensible economic, you know, processes going on from our government. So, yeah, it's just ridiculous. And, you know, there's comments in the chat room about, you know, how we're trying to recoup $180 million for months. Now we're just now attempting to recover the money from FEMA and everything else. It's a huge mess. And I remember when Katrina rolled through New Orleans, okay, tried to clean out that cesspool. This is my thing. Same thing with the hurricane or whatever that hit Thailand, the earthquake and hurricane and everything else. Because of our media, because we are so connected as a world now, when a disaster like that hits the other side of the planet, well, for some whatever reason, our government feels compelled to be involved. 100 years ago, 200 years ago, we probably wouldn't have known about it. Okay, and of course, you know, the population's changed, so a larger number of people died in that disaster than would have died 200 years ago. But I would argue that it's proportional. All right. So if you're talking about a 0.3% of the population of the planet died in this natural disaster, well, then it's still 0.3%. Even though the numbers are larger, it's still 0.3% of the population. So if any aid had been sent, it would have been a couple cargo ships full of, you know, food and water or whatever, and maybe some, you know, medics, maybe the Red Cross would have went over or whatever, and that was it. That would be all. Same with New Orleans. You know, Louisiana gets swamped or whatever. Well, all the churches would come out of the woodwork, and they did. The Red Cross comes out of the woodwork. The Salvation Army comes out, and they did. They went down there, they did their thing. But now you have FEMA out there cutting checks, just passing money out. And, you know, a lot of that garbage that washed out of New Orleans washed into Austin, Texas. And what you saw was shocking. I mean, I live maybe 2 or 3 miles from Highland Mall, where they set up the FEMA Crisis Center, Highland Mall, the urban mall, if you will. So they set up this FEMA center and everything else, and people are getting their checks and going from there to Walmart. Now, this is money that's okay. We figured out, you know, how much you would have made if you were here to keep a job and everything else. So here's a percentage of your income so that you and your household can buy food, get gas, do all the things that you need to do. How the hell is a large screen television something you need to do, especially when you're either living in a hotel room or some bullshit trailer that FEMA's provided for you? How is that something you need? Why are you taking that? It's because it's not your fucking money, I guess. You spend it on whatever the hell you want. How are you taking that money and just, you're pissing it away on whatever you want? And now FEMA's like, oh, well, look at this. We're $180 million short. You know, they got their hat out looking for $180 million. Do you have $180 million? I keep hearing different numbers. It was my understanding that we were up around 300 million people in the United States. We're talking about, you know, the numbers I've been hearing lately, they suggest 200 million. You know, so I'm assuming maybe 250 million. So this means that, you know, every person pulls a dollar out of the pocket and FEMA gets their money recovered, okay, gets it taken care of. But then we're talking about $14, $15, $16 trillion. Nobody in the United States has that in their pocket. Nobody has that money to just whip out and go, here it is, let's go ahead and pay on our piece. It's simply not there. And our government spends in this manner without any thinking, without any forethought. They're like, we're just going to go ahead and get these programs going, and then we're going to make the taxpayer pay for it on the back end. We're going to go into debt. And again, it comes right back to this thing I'm talking about being half-assed. You know what? Why pay for it? If you're the United States, why not just take it at fucking gunpoint? Why just not set up a government whatever to do it, whatever it is you're doing? You know, if you show up and go, you know what, we're not going to pass out welfare checks anymore. We're simply going to take a certain percentage, whatever percentage we need, the farmland and the labor and, you know, the produce and everything else, and that's what we're taking for welfare. And that's what we're doing with it. Whether we're selling it or whether they're passing out directly to the welfare recipients, that's what we're doing it. We're just going to take it fucking over. And while I understand that, of course, by taking the money out of everybody's pocket, well, that's the most efficient way to accomplish the same ends. But it just means that you've got a whole fucking population, every person in this country, stressed out about our economy. And it's because, you know, just go fucking all out. Don't do this half-assed bullshit. So I got about 10 minutes left. The phone call number is 347-989-1371. And, you know, quite honestly, when I came on the air tonight, I knew I was going to be talking about the unemployment as protected class. I had a couple other things I want to talk about, but I didn't take any good notes like I normally do because I've been busy with other shit. Give me just a second here. My daughter came to me today. The high school prom is coming up, and she's fundraising. They're selling cookie dough. They're selling cookie dough in 2-pound tubs of cookie dough. And I don't think a 2-pound tub really is that big. I'm thinking about a 16-ounce tub of butter right now in my head, and it's not that very big. $10 a pop. And if she sells so many, she gets a free prom ticket. They got some other swag or whatever they're giving out or what have you. So I'm already, you know, I'm sure I'm already in it for at least 2 tubs of cookie dough. And I'll be taking a thing with me to work tomorrow and passing it around. But at least I won't be going to people at gunpoint and insisting that they're required to subsidize my daughter's prom. I don't have that. I don't have that going for me. I'm not like the government. I don't have that option. So, but yeah, it's interesting being, you know, a father of a 17-year-old, and this is my lot. And it's come along before, the kids with their different little fundraisers and everything else, and you know, seeing all this stuff coming down, it's kind of interesting, kind of kooky to be, you know, that American dad basically, where you know that's the kind of thing you do. These fundraisers come along and you break out the wallet and you get your friends and your neighbors to do the same thing because I don't know. I don't know what the mentality is. You know, maybe I should tell them, no, you're not doing that. If you want a sweater, I'll go ahead and just buy the sweater. If you want your prom tickets, I'll just go ahead and buy the prom tickets. But then she doesn't get to feel like she's part of that whole process. So there's that. Somebody in the chat room mentioned how they've got a daughter who's selling, you know, chocolate bars for $2 a pop. These are chocolate bars at the gas station. The equivalent chocolate would probably be $1, and it probably costs the company who made the chocolate bar about 3 cents. You know, it's interesting that chocolate is becoming more expensive. It's getting more expensive than chocolate itself. So what you see with some of these chocolate companies, I forget which company actually came out with this, but they have got this air-puffed chocolate now. The chocolate has air bubbles in it so that the bar or whatever it is the same size, basically, as the solid chocolate bars, but now it's there's less chocolate. So, and they're probably going to charge you more for the chocolate bar because of the extra processing. But yeah, this is the world we live in now. This is the kind of situations we're facing. So 5 minutes and 30 seconds remaining. And let's see, next week, I'm going to go back to the list. And next week I'm going to actually have a full list. There's been a bunch of things I wanted to talk about. Looks like my video is being processed, so if you do want to check out the video, the channel is The Capital T, Jason, capital J, Sorrell, S-O-R-R-E-L-L. That's the YouTube channel. It's all one word. I got some editing to do to the video yet. I got to get some links in the description and everything so that all the appropriate people are blamed for the video. But if you got 30 minutes of your life that you don't feel is necessary anymore, you can check out that video. You might dig it. Maybe not. You know, leave comments if you do check out the video. Now, there was another news story earlier today. Like I said, I didn't have very good notes. And off the top of my head, I just can't think of what it is. I have noticed today a shift in the conservative party's rhetoric. The conservative party was talking about how, for a while, Perry, everybody was behind Perry. Perry was going to be the golden boy of the conservative party. Perry was the conservative party's last hope. Another Texan coming in to, you know, to save the country, basically. And, you know, a no-nonsense, you know, Texan. That's what we are down here. Even if you come from another state, you become Texan eventually. Start talking like George Bush, and you do crazy things. You squinty eyes in the sunset and everything, and you talk about how this country just needs to get back on its horse and ride into the sunset and make sure that, you know, people are going to have jobs and we're going to have preserved values, things like that. Yeah. So Perry was going to be the savior of the conservative party in the country. Didn't work out that way, though. He gets on the campaign trail a little late, so he's not as polished as some of these other people. He thought that was a good idea. Come on late and then, you know, kind of ride the wave. You know, here he is. He makes a big splash. He's going to ride that wave. Well, he's flubbing and everything else in these different debates and everything. And now who are they talking about? Now who are they looking to? Herman Cain and Ron Paul. Now, Herman Cain, okay, like I said, I back Herman Cain. Ron Paul, though, the conservatives are getting on the Ron Paul bandwagon. 2 weeks ago, he was a kook. He was a nut. 2 weeks ago, these people said there's no way that they would support Ron Paul. He was too crazy, too far out there, too isolationist, too all kinds of things. And now they're talking about him being a contender. Now they're talking about him being, well, maybe he's the guy that we need to put up. They're leaning more towards Herman Cain. So, Herman Cain, you know, he's not a politician, but he has been politically active for a very long time. The man, you know, he's done talk shows. He is very conservative. So very interesting candidate, has a lot of good ideas, a lot of interesting ideas. But again, last week, Herman Cain was a nobody. Last week, Herman Cain didn't have a hope in hell against Perry and Romney and everything else. They don't want Romney. For whatever reason, they're dead set against Romney. I think he's too much Massachusetts or wherever the hell he's from, too East Coast for the Conservative Party to be a serious contender. Some of his political leanings are too much like our presidents, our liberal presidents, to be accepted by the Conservative Party. It's going to be an interesting election season. It's going to be an interesting campaign. Next week, In this time slot, this channel, I'm going to be talking about some big news stories. I also want to talk about some different things going on in the left-hand path, occult, Satanism situation. We're going to be talking about some different things. You know, there's a comment in the chat room right now that he's Mormon. I don't think that's the thing that's killing him. I don't think that's what it is at all. I think it's more to do with some of his political decisions. To sit there and say that religion is the issue, it's just too small-minded, in my opinion. That doesn't work for me. I would be disappointed if a man were held back due to his religious leanings. And when we're talking about political office, especially when you got a country he's talking about, desperately talking about the separation of church and state. So to hold somebody's religion against him just goes against or throws against the cultural trend that I see going on right now. So we only got a few seconds left. I'm going to go ahead and roll the outro. Check out the show next week. We're going to be talking about the occult, some different trends I see going on in Satanism, the occult online. So those who have an interest in those kinds of things will be an interesting show. That's it. We're out of here.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but it's the old expression goes. Of course, special thanks to Dad, the Rocky DeRoma, for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?